All right. The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah. That was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon.
Microphone muted.
The which Jeremiah the prophet spoke unto all the people of Judah and to all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, from the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Amon, king of Judah, even unto this day is the 23rd year. The word of Yahweh has come unto me, and I have spoken unto you, rising early and speaking, but you have not hearkened. And Yahweh has sent unto you all his servants the prophets, rising early and sending them, but you have not hearkened, nor inclined your ear to hear. They said, turn ye again now every one from his evil way, and from the evil of your doings, and dwell in the land that Yahweh has given unto you and to your fathers forever and ever. And go not after other gods, serve them, and to worship them, and provoke me not to anger with the works of your hands, and I will not do you hurt. Yet you have not hearkened to me, saith Yahweh, that you might provoke me to anger with the works of your hands, to your own hurt. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh of hosts, because you have not heard my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith Yahweh, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and will bring them against this land and against the inhabitants thereof and against all these nations round about, and I will utterly destroy them and will make them an astonishment and a hissing and perpetual desolation. Moreover, I will take from them the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, the sound of the millstones and the light of the candle. And this whole land shall be a desolation and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Should I continue?
No, this is a good place to start. Just stop.
Right.
I think. Verse 11. Yeah, 10 to 12 verses at a time are fine. That I want to say a few things here, that there are problems with chronology. There are problems with generally accepted chronology that are just, some of the chronologies are just wrong. And Josiah, and according to my own comments since we began this, because I've never had a chance to go through the books of Kings and Chronicles and organize my own chronology, to study them and organize my own chronology. Josiah popularly becomes king in 640 BC, according to popular chronologies. And 13th year would be 627 BC to round things out. So the 23rd year would be 617 BC. But according to all of the popular chronologies of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, he didn't become the king of Babylon until 606 BC. And the biblical accounts have Josiah dead before Nebuchadnezzar ever comes into Judea. So if Nebuchadnezzar didn't become king until 606 BC, and Josiah is already dead by 606 BC, this chronology that we see here really doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. Josiah was slain. He became king in 640 BC, according to the popular chronologies. He reigned 31 years, according to the scripture. There isn't a whole lot of room in the books of Kings and Chronicles to push the beginning of his reign much further back than 640 BC. There's really not. He's several generations after Hezekiah, who died in about 698 BC. So you can't push Josiah back any further than 640, in my opinion. And he would have died in 609 or 608, depending on how you count in the years, right? So let's say I prefer to settle on 608 BC, and the book of Nezar doesn't become king until 606 BC, according to the Babylonian records.
But Bill, it's his son.
We have a discrepancy there in the chronology. I'm sorry?
Maybe I'm wrong. Isn't it in the first verse talking about his son? In the fourth year of Josiah's son.
Yeah, but in the third verse, from the 13th year of Josiah, son of Ammon, king of Judah, even unto this day, that is the 320th year. So while it's possible that Jehoiakim was associated on the throne before his father's death, right, that his father is still ruling, it's very clear in Scripture that Josiah ruled 31 years, and it's very clear right here that we're only in the 23rd year of that rule. So Josiah has to live 8 more years, and Josiah dies, and the historical context of his death supports this. He dies in 608 BC. He dies at the hands of Pharaoh Necho. After the fall of the Assyrian Empire, when Pharaoh Necho marches on Carchemish to try to take it for Egypt. And that event could not have happened until after 612 BC. So it's very credible that Josiah died in 609 or 608 BC. And the book of Nezar wasn't the king yet. He wasn't the king of Babylon yet. By all of the records that we have, the archaeological records that we have. So there's some, I'm just saying there's some discrepancies here in the chronology.
Can I ask something else about verse 3? Because it, could it be saying from the 13th year of Josiah's reign, so let's say 627, that is the 23rd year. Unto this day, that is the 23rd year. So now it sounds like he's saying from 627 till today, it's been 23 years.
So this yeah, so six, it should be 617.
No, it sounds like it's saying from the 13th year of Josiah. So from 627, if he became king in 640.
Okay.
And to this day, that is the 23rd year. So he's saying today is the 23rd year from the 13th day. 13th year. So this is the 23rd year from the 13th year of Josiah's reign.
You know, that would be awfully weird because it seems to me that he's saying the 23rd day of the rule of Hosea. So if it's the 23rd year, then it's 604 BC.
Maybe there are other Bible versions that are clearer. One other one. I don't know.
A chronology on the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah would be really neat because the church view on the chronology on the epistles of Paul is so messed up. And your work, Bill, it makes it so much more clear. And it would be really cool if you could someday do a similar series on the chronology of the kings of the northern tribes and of Judah too.
Yeah, I would like to do that one day. I really would.
I'm just looking sorry.
But here, the way I read this is it's the 23rd year from Josiah, which makes a lot of problems. But if it's the 23rd year of Jeremiah's prophecy, I can't tell that from the context of the previous chapters. I can't. Because, Shalem, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, reigned instead of Josiah, his father. So we have to assume Josiah is dead by Jeremiah chapter 22.
I'm just looking at the New King James Version.
So then we have to assume that 10 years has already elapsed between 22 and 25. You see what I mean? 10 or 11 years has to already have elapsed. So yeah, the language might clear that up. If I'd rather study it for myself, though. I'm sorry.
In the new KJV, if you read 3, it says, from the 13th year of Josiah, king of Judah, even to this day, this is the 23rd year in which the word of the Lord has come to me, and I have spoken to you, rising early and speaking.
Okay, that would make me want to study the Hebrew, because that would clear it up. That would be a lot more clear. And that would be a much more appropriate chronology.
I've got the Lit V, which is a literal version of Hebrew translation. From the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, even to this day, this 23 years, the word of Jehovah has come to me, and I have spoken to you. That's what the Lit V says.
And that clarifies it. So it's the King James version that led me to believe, and the translation should have been clearer.
I think I've got the Lit V hard copy,
too. Jeremiah is already prophesying 23 years, and that clears up the problems with the chronology, for the most part.
Well, we'd have to double check, but possible.
Well, from 627, 23 years would, if that's what this says, right? Because I would want to study Hebrew, right? I would want to read every word and translate it for myself, right? So the King James Version is wrong, and the other versions, those two other versions are correct, then that makes sense, because from 627, 23 years is 604, and the book of Nezer has already been king for 2 years, and Josiah has already been dead for 4 years. And they're saying this is the fourth year of Josiah's son Jehoiakim. That's perfect, man. That's perfect. Good old Shalem only ruled for a couple of months. So if this is the fourth year of Jehoiakim from 608, then it's 604. And the Nebuchadnezzar has been king of Babylon for 2 years. And this says that it was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar king of Babylon. So that's fine, because the counting would allow for that. It would. So that's perfect. Okay. I'm glad we resolved that. Don't pay attention to the King James Version. Jeremiah 25:3. Thank you. We got that now. It's 604 BC, maybe 605, and that's because it depends on what part of the year they died in. We don't know. If I die tomorrow and you're my successor, then the day after tomorrow is in your first year. Do you understand that? Microphone muted. Microphone activated. For 364 days from tomorrow, it's going to be your first year. But then when you're king for a year and a day, it's your second year.
Yeah, like some Eastern Europeans, if you, let's say you turn 30, they'll say, the next day they'll say to you, yo, you're in their 31st year now.
Right.
And that's how they say it. They always add the year, because you are technically in the 31st year of your life.
Yes. And that's how they counted. That's how they usually counted the chronologies in ancient times. And that's how they counted the time of the ministry of Christ. That's how Luke counted the time, the years of the Caesars, so that we know when the ministry of Christ began, in the 15th year of Tiberius Caesar. So Tiberius became king in 614, and now it's 628. Well, it's only 14 years. No, it's in his 15th year, day after his 14th anniversary, or actually the minute after his 14th anniversary.
Shall I continue?
Microphone muted.
There's one more Please. Thing I want to talk about, and that's that this is Jeremiah's 70-year prophecy. This is the beginning of his prophecy, that these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. But this is, and when the 70 years are accomplished, I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith Yahweh, for their iniquity and the land of the Chaldeans, and I will make it perpetual desolations. That there's a couple of 70 years prophecies in Jeremiah. First, Jerusalem's going to lay desolate for 70 years, but this is 70 years that these nations shall serve the king of Babylon. It was almost 70 years. I mean, he became king according to popular chronologies in 606 BC, but Cyrus conquered Babylon in 539 BC. So that's, you could argue that's only 66 years, but it's close enough. And depending on how you count, it could be 67. So it's close enough. Cyrus the Persian conquered Babylon. The popularly accepted date doesn't necessarily have to be the correct date, but Cyrus the Persian is esteemed to have conquered Babylon in 539 BC. And the book of Nezor is esteemed to have taken the throne of Babylon in 606 BC, according to most encyclopedias, books, whatever. So that would be 67 years. But it's damn close enough, so that's all that matters. Okay, that's all I wanted to say.
All right. Hopefully the KJV doesn't fail us again in this chapter. Verse 12. And it shall come to pass when 70 years are accomplished that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith Yahweh, for their iniquity in the land of the Chaldeans, and will make it perpetual desolations. And I will bring upon that land all my words which I have pronounced against it, even all that is written in this book, which Jeremiah has prophesied against all the nations. For many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of them also, and I will recompense them according to their deeds and according to the works of their own hands. For thus saith Yahweh God of Israel unto me, take the wine cup of this fury at my hand, and cause all the nations to whom I send thee to drink it. And they shall drink it, and be moved, and be mad, because of the sword that I will send among them. Then took I the cup at Yahweh's hand, and made all the nations to drink unto whom Yahweh had sent me, to wit, Jerusalem, and the cities of Judah, and the kings thereof, and the princes thereof, to make them a desolation, an astonishment, a hissing, and a curse, as it is this day. Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and his servants, and his princes, and all his people, and all the mingled people, and all the kings of the land of Uz, and all the kings of the land of the Philistines, and Ashkelon, and Aza, and Ekron, and the remnant of Ashdod, Edom, and Moab, and the children of Ammon, and all the kings of Tyrus, and all the kings of Zidon, and the kings of the isles which are beyond the sea, the Dan and Tama and Buz, and all that are in the utmost corners, and all the kings of Arabia, and all the kings of the mingled people that dwell in the desert, and all the kings of Zimri, and all the kings of Elam, and all the kings of the Medes, and all the kings of the north, far and near, one with another, and all the kingdoms of the world which are upon the face of the earth, and the king of Sheshach shall drink after them. Should I continue?
No, that's good. This is odd because it must have, the land of Uz must have been like a borderland type of place in between southern Judah and Edom. And I'm saying that because Job, in verse 1, chapter 1 of Job, Job dwelt in the land of Uz. So hear oohs and ehs. Maybe southern Judah, or it was just a borderland wilderness that they didn't have the borders that the geographical borders that we have today, right? They just didn't have them back then. So that's kind of interesting to me.
There's no map. There's no line on a map where they said this is this land and this is that land. There's just an understanding, I guess.
Right, exactly. So Uz must have been kind of like the gray area in between Judah and Edom, I swear. There's a land of Uz and
microphone activated.
And then there's a land of Edom.
And then you have these mingled people.
I bet the word.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to next. The kings of Arabia. Now, that word Arabia first appeared in the time of Solomon in the scripture, right? Before the time of Solomon, it was distinct lands. Midian, this nation, that nation. But from the time of Solomon, that word Arabia first appears. And it seems that all the people must be mixed together because it's being called Arabia, Midian, and by distinct kings. Seems that area to the Jordan, what was getting all mingled up and screwed up by that time with the Canaanites. You had the Amorites, the Midianites, and many other tribes there. It's a Jokhan. That they were all getting mixed up by the time of Solomon, because that's when that name Arabia first appears. And then where it says mingled people, that's from the same word. In Arabia, Strong is saying that's from 6152, mingled people from 6153, but they're the same word. And the word means to be mixed by growing dark. Oh, Michael, if they were really sand niggers by that time, but they were mixed up tribes and they must have been mixed with the Canaanites. Start mixing with the Canaanites, the Amorites and the Canaanites at some point or other. By the time of Josephus, the name of Moab is gone, the name of Midian is gone, and they're Arabs, they're just Arabs.
It's like the same deal they tried to make with Abraham that he rejected. Well, they succeeded in that same deal with the other tribes, you know, to have an allyship and to, you know, share each other's daughters or whatever they were doing. They were intermarrying. They wanted to intermarry with Abraham, but he rejected them, but the others probably didn't.
Exactly. And Yahweh gave up all the other tribes for the sake of the children of Israel. And he tells us that in different ways in different places, but that's just the way it had to be because they all went off into paganism. So he gave them up and focused on the children of Israel in order to obtain his will in the world. So the children of Israel have been the tool in his hand ever since. And we might think it's great thing, but it's also a great
out. It says here the word for Sheshek is another word for Babylon. I was wondering, do you know where that word, why Sheshek or why Babylon is also referred to as Sheshek?
You know, for the life of me, I've never heard that. What verse is Sheshek in?
26.
It's saying that will be the last one, which kind of makes sense because Babylon lasts into the time of Christ and the apostles.
So that's why another name last to drink.
Apparently taken. I can't identify with any Babylon.
Yeah, he's the last to drink. Sheshek is the last to drink. from the cup.
Yeah, well, I was just going after the Hebrew myself. Shack, the name is used twice by Jeremiah, Jeremiah 25, 26 and Jeremiah 51, 41. In a song. To be an example of bash, which involves a substitution of successive letters of a word by letters from the opposite end of the alphabet. Okay, well, you know what? I kind of think this is bullshit, but that's all right. I'm skeptical. But where the second letter, that they're replacing letters in the word from the opposite order of the alphabet, right? Where the second letter of the alphabet B is replaced. Wow. Which is the shin. The I by the purpose of this code here is not clear, since Jeremiah certainly didn't hesitate to speak openly of the demise of Babylon. He prophesied against Babylon all the time. I don't know where they come up with that. I'm going to look at Jeremiah 51:41, but I don't know where they come up with that. I think that might be a contrivance. I wouldn't trust it. But it does say in Jeremiah 51:41, how is Shishak taken and how is the Lord surprised? How has Babylon become an instrument among the nations? So Shishak and Babylon are equated there in a Hebrew parallelism. That is a parallelism, right? I have to agree that Shishak is some kind of reference to Babylon, but is it in the manner that they're saying? I think it's kind of weird, and I would be skeptical about it until I could prove it out for myself. I'm always skeptical about what most scholars think, right? That's what makes me what I am. So Shishak. I'd want to study that word in Babylonian and do a whole lot of other determinations before I agreed with that. But that's all right. It's used in a parallelism for Babylon in Jeremiah chapter 51, and that's pretty clear, so I would have to agree with that. But I don't know why, and I don't know if why they say it is true. That they're saying in Strong's, apparently taken from the goddess Shak. I never heard any goddess Shak in Babylonian literature before. Check that out too.
BDB says the same thing. BDB says it's a goddess and that it means fine linen or something.
Yeah, I've never heard of that goddess. Never have. So in the 3rd century BC, this word is a verb, which means to have been taken. And that is a verb which means to hunt. Boast, how has Shishak been in the King James? The Septuagint, how has the boast of all the earth been taken and caught in a snare? That is, how is taken and caught the boast of all the earth? There we have it. That's what it says in Greek. How has the boast of all the earth been taken and caught? That's the Septuagint, the Greek, and I'm reading the Greek. And how has Babylon become for a vanishing among the nations. And Brenton translated that as a desolation, but it means a vanishing. So desolation is cool. So in the 3rd century BC, they did not interpret this Hebrew word to be Shishak. I'm sorry, they didn't. That they interpreted it, and I'm not saying they're perfect either, but this would want to make me study it more, study the Hebrew more, right? Because they are saying Hal is taken and trapped, the boast of all the earth. Hal has Babylon come to be for a vanishing among the nations. That's Jeremiah 28:41 in the Septuagint, which is Jeremiah 51:41 in the Masoretic text, right? So the Septuagint translators did not interpret that word they interpreted it to refer to a boast or a praise, if you want to look at the equivalent in, I'm looking at the King James. They interpreted it to mean a boast. They interpreted Shishak to mean a boast when they translated the Septuagint. Compare the Septuagint Greek, and compare that to the King James. They interpreted Shishak to be a boast in the 3rd century BC. This Shishak thing, I would want to study it more before I can't stay. And you're always on the safe side studying it more. Because I would want to go into Strong's Concordance or Jesenius and look at all the similarly spelled words surrounding 8347 to see if this could possibly have any other meaning that was close to what the Septuagint interpreted it to mean. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
That's how
you have to do it,
right? That's what you have to do it. Automatically assume that the Septuagint translators are wrong and that Throngs and Brown Driver Briggs know better. Examine it, why the Septuagint translators may have interpreted that Shishak term to mean a boast rather than to be some goddess that I never heard of, right? So then I would look up my books of inscriptions to see if there's any goddess with a name close to that one. Of course, can't do all that in a while. I'm sorry. That's something I would do for a commentary.
All right.
I think it's important that we talk about it all here, and it helps.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, give the pointers out for sure.
Why don't these mainstream people give citations? It's like, what's their deal?
It happens all the time. They don't give citations.
Wow.
It happens all the time. That they're the authority, and they're going to make a decision, and that's what they're going to tell you, and that's it.
Can't believe people trust that.
You don't really see any tell you
now
which writers, what chapters and verses. Which writers in what chapters and verses use the term the way that they're saying that they use the term, right? So you could go look up those Greek writers on your own and see the words, and I've done that many times. And sometimes they only have inscriptions to lean on, but they tell you which inscriptions and which journals those inscriptions were published in. So they really do go out of their way to document their reasons for a particular definition, really do.
It's good.
Hebrew Hebrews, that they don't do that. They don't do it. Sometimes they refer to Bible verses, but for the most part, they don't do it. If Shishak is a Babylonian goddess, I want to know where she was mentioned in Babylonian literature. So maybe they could say something like Epic of Gilgamesh or Inscription of the Nebuchadnezzar or something.
It just feels so common sense, but I guess they're God, right?
Yeah, it's like they don't have to give an explanation, which is which means their whole thing. Yeah. A lot of their doctrines are built on like a house of cards.
Yeah.
BibleWorks has 8347 Shishak, meaning Shishak equals, quote, thy fine linen, unquote. And then another name for Babylon.
Apparently take your channel disconnected from your channel.
Goddess back. If it means thy fine linen, why would it be a name of a goddess? Is it the goddess of linen? It seems silly to me, right? Right? The way they have that definition worded seems silly to me. But there is a Shishak page on Wikipedia. It's not a very big one. Shishak, whose king is mentioned in the Hebrew Bible in Jeremiah 25:26, supposed to be equivalent to Babel or Babylon, according to a secret mode of writing practiced among the Jews of unknown antiquity. Okay, get the fuck out of here. Which consisted in substituting the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet for the first, the next to last one for the second, and so on. Thus, the letters SH, SH become BB, L, IE, Babel. I think that's bullshit. And pointing to an Atbash cipher, which I'm not familiar with. The Atbash is a mono-alphabetic substitution cipher originally used to encrypt the Hebrew alphabet. It can be modified for use with any known writing system with the standard collating order. That just sounds like some bullshit to me. I'm going to ignore that. The city Shishak does not appear on any map nor in any other, save the book of Jeremiah. Well, yeah, no shit. The Atbash cipher was applied, and out of Shishak came the word Babel. That's an assumption they're reaching. This is supposed to be confirmed by a reference to Jeremiah chapter 51. I just spoke about that in the Septuagint, where Shishak and Babylon are in parallel clauses. I do agree that that's a parallelism. I don't agree that Shishak means what they say it means. Lots more study before I either solidly agreed or solidly disagreed, for real.
It's likely some Shlomo telling Christians how to read the Old Testament.
Yeah, probably.
Great.
Verse 27.
So Shishak is a Hebrew parallelism for Babylon, but I would not admit to know how. I would want to study that more. And right, according to the Septuagint, it means boasting. So Babylon would be like boasting by vaunting itself above all the other nations, right?
And maybe that's why it's judged last. Maybe that's why it's the last to drink from the cup.
Yes, I would agree with that. That could very well be. Okay, we continue. I mean, we've exhausted this topic. We can't add nothing to it.
All right. Verse 27. Therefore, thou shalt say unto them, thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel, drink ye, and be drunken, and spew, and fall, and rise no more, because of the sword which I will send among you.
And this shall be, if they refuse to take the cup at thine hand to drink, then shalt thou say unto them, Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, ye shall certainly drink. For lo, I begin to bring evil on the city, which is called by my name. And should ye be utterly unpunished, ye shall not be unpunished. For I will call for a sword upon all the inhabitants of the earth, saith Yahweh of hosts. Therefore prophesy thou against them all these words, and say unto them, Yahweh shall roar from on high, and utter his voice from his holy habitation. He shall mightily roar upon his habitation. He shall give a shout, as they that tread the grapes, against all the inhabitants of the earth. A noise shall come even to the ends of the earth, for Yahweh has a controversy with the nations. He will plead with all flesh. He will give them that are wicked to the sword, saith Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, Behold, evil shall go forth from nation to nation, and a great whirlwind shall be raised up from the coast of the earth. And the slain of Yahweh shall be at that day from one end of the earth even unto the other end of the earth. They shall not be lamented, neither gathered, nor buried. It shall be done upon the ground. Howl, ye shepherds, and cry, and wall yourselves in ashes, ye principal of the flock, for the days of your slaughter and of your dispersions are accomplished, and ye shall fall like a pleasant vessel. And the shepherds shall have no way to flee, nor the principal of the flock to escape. A voice of the cry of the shepherds and the howling of the principal of the flock shall be heard, for Yahweh has spoiled their pasture. And the peaceable habitations are cut down because of the fierce anger of Yahweh. He has forsaken his covert as the lion, for their land is desolate because of the fierceness of the oppressor and because of his fierce anger. Chapter 25.
Well, one thing I want to mention earlier that I forgot to was this word world, verse 26. And all the kings of the north, far and near, one with another, and all the kingdoms of the world. That word for world is
Is what? You cut out, Bill.
Eretz.
Yep.
Oh, it's Eretz. It's or land. And it's the same word that's translated 32, for example, and in verse 30, for example. So it's Eretz and Eretz. It should have never said world in verse 26. It should have just said land or earth, as it is in verses 30 and 32.
And I'm looking at the trampling of the grapes, and I'm thinking you could cross-reference that to verses like Isaiah 64, is it? And then you've got that part where the Lord, they shall certainly drink, you shall certainly drink down. Is that, would you cross-reference that to Obadiah?
The grapes are in italics for some reason.
Well, I didn't see it. I'm just looking
that's
quickly.
Because of the word tread, right? That word tread is typically used treading grapes, right?
Oh, okay.
So as they that tread, he shall mightily roar from his habitation. He shall give a shout as they that tread, as they that tread. I don't know if they treaded grapes and they yelled while they were doing it. It is kind of weird. It seems to be that's the implication that was read by the translators. I don't know if that's the inference in the actual translation. But the NAS had interpreted it the same way, and the Septuagint said, like men gathering grapes rather than treading grapes. So that's kind of weird. That's kind of weird. Gathering, men gathering grapes. So I guess that's just the implication drawn from the word for tread. I would probably, if looking at the way this is structured, I would probably make the same implication. That's off the top of my head. I would have to go read the Hebrew word for word to see it pulled up. But it seems to be the implication by the use of that word, the verb for tread. So yeah, Joe, I would make that cross-reference. I would want to make that cross-reference. And I believe that the destruction of ancient Babylon is sort of a type for the coming destruction. It's a type. It's a model. It's not an exact plan, but it's a type. And I, so that means that this is really a dual prophecy sort of thing, right? Which is fine to interpret it that way because it's a type for the destruction of Mystery Babylon. So you get parallel lists to that chapter in Isaiah and Obadiah, and also to the Revelation chapter 14, the harvests of Yahweh that I had just presented. I think it was 14, it might have been 15, I forget. To Revelation chapter 19, right? Because it's a type. Because the fall of ancient Babylon is a type for the fall of Mystery Babylon.
Microphone activated.
I have a question. Roll up, sorry.
Sure.
So he said, it's in, find the verse, sorry, I was, okay, so 29, for lo, I begin to bring evil on this city, which is called by my name. He's referring to Jerusalem, right?
Yeah, that's what I would assume, yes.
So we have the beginning as Yah. What does Jerusalem mean, the rest of the world? Like, I understand that Am is masculine for a man's name, but the in-between words, I mean, I'm just asking, what does Jerusalem mean? Because I don't believe I don't know what it means.
Well, no, I don't necessarily agree with the popular definitions either. I mean, I don't know enough to disagree with them. I haven't studied it enough to disagree with them, but teaching of peace is how it is in the lexicons. And that word Salem, I do believe that means peace. And Melchizedek was the king of Salem, and he was in that area when Abraham gave him tithes. So it may have been called Salem at one time. So that kind of makes sense to me, that main lexicon definition. But that's another word I would want to study more deeply before I made my mind up, because I just don't believe the lexicons. I never do.
Like, so the first two letters would be his name, though, right? And that's why he's saying it's named by me or named after me? Or am I just... grasping at straws on that one, because
right, I agree that would be a little difficult. I don't know if I would interpret it in that manner right away. Oop, Adonizak. I don't see the name Yahweh in Jerusalem at all. The first and Resh, that's IR. Shin, Yerusa, Med and M, Jerusalem. And the name Yahweh isn't in that at all. I mean, one letter isn't Yahweh's name, just that Yod.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
It's just a Yod, and then it's an R. And immediately after the R is a Vav, and then a Shin, and then a Lamed, and then a Mem. It's basically I-R. Jerusalem. Add your own vowels.
You're kind of breaking up. What was that?
Jerusalem. 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 Jerusalem.
Well, so when he says, which is called by my name, is that like he's not saying the literal name is somewhere in there? Like, he's just saying that could be another title for him? Something to do with like
peace? Well, he would be the teacher of peace if that's where his temple is.
Okay.
And if that's what the word really means.
So where was the teacher part? Because you're breaking up a lot. I might be missing something. Did you say that one of the part of the word might be teacher of peace?
That is how the lexicons are defining it.
Okay.
Which is Brown, Driver, Briggs, and Strong's. That's how they're defining the word. Now, Brown, Driver, Briggs also has foundation of peace or possession of peace. So I would want to study that more.
Thanks.
That's about the best I can do for you right now. I don't know why Brown, Driver, Briggs has possession of peace or foundation of peace, and Strong's has teacher of peace. I don't know Hebrew. I mean, I got a small vocabulary, a couple hundred words, but I would have to look all those words up and look in Jesenius and look at all the entries around it to see what those components mean.
Okay, I think I know why they say possession, because Strong's 3423 is Yarash. So maybe the Yarash Salem, and they're saying it's possession of peace. It says Yarash is to take possession or inherit.
Yeah, well, that makes perfect sense. And that is how it works.
So it's a title for him. It's saying my name, but it's sort of a, I mean, among others, right? I suppose. Or maybe not. I don't know.
Right. I went into the comments and say that God has 72 names, and that's it.
Should we continue?
With chapter 26?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do that. Is there anything else to talk about in 25? Notice that the shepherds are the ones that are going to be punished the worst.
Yeah, I like how Yahweh calls the shepherds a pleasant vessel. I think he's sort of alluding to how they should have been something more, but they're going to fall anyways because they messed up.
Right, I would agree with that.
Okay, chapter 26 then. Verse 1.
In the beginning of the reign of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, came this word from Yahweh, saying, Thus saith Yahweh, stand in the court of Yahweh's house, and speak unto all the cities of Judah, which come to worship in Yahweh's house, all the words that I command thee to speak unto them, diminish not a word. If so be they will hearken, and turn every man from his evil way, that I may repent me of the evil which I purpose to do unto them, because of the evil of their doings. And thou shalt say unto them, Thus saith Yahweh, If ye will not hearken to me, to walk in my law, which I have set before you, to hearken to the words of my servants the prophets, whom I sent unto you, both rising up early and sending them, but you have not hearkened, then will I make this house like Shiloh, and will make this city a curse to all the nations of the earth. So the priests and the prophets and all the people heard Jeremiah speaking these words in the house of Yahweh. Now it came to pass, when Jeremiah had made an end of speaking all that Yahweh had commanded him to speak unto all the people, that the priests and the prophets and all the people took him, saying, You shall surely die. Why have you prophesied in the name of Yahweh, saying, This house shall be like Shiloh, and this city shall be desolate without an inhabitant? And all the people were gathered against Jeremiah in the house of Yahweh. When the princes of Judah heard these things, then they came up from the king's house unto the house of Yahweh, and sat down in the entry of the new gate of Yahweh's house. Then spoke the priests and the prophets unto the princes and to all the people, saying, This man is worthy to die, for he has prophesied against this city, as you have heard with your own ears. Then spoke Jeremiah unto all the princes and to all the people, saying, Yahweh sent me to prophesy against this house and against this city all the words that you have heard. Therefore now amend your ways and your doings, and obey the voice of Yahweh your God, and Yahweh will repent him of the evil that he has pronounced against you. As for me, behold, I am in your hand. Do with me as seems good and meet unto you. But know for certain that if you put me to death, you shall surely bring innocent blood upon yourselves and upon this city and upon the inhabitants thereof. For of a truth, Yahweh has sent me unto you to speak all these words in your ears. Would you like me to continue?
No, this is good. Where are we? What? We're at the end of 15 now.
15, yeah.
The vessel, more easily breaks or bends or whatever. That's all I'm going to say. That the shepherds were like pleasant vessels. They would fall like pleasant vessels. They would be more easily damaged. That's my opinion. Here, yeah, you know, Shiloh, you'd think Shiloh's a positive thing, right? Shiloh means place of rest. This house shall be like Shiloh, and I will make this city a curse to all the nations of the earth. Well, that don't sound like a place of rest. A cup of trembling. That this works in that Israel, Shiloh was in Ephraim, and Israel was already destroyed. So that's why he's saying, I will make this house like Shiloh, meaning it's going to be totally destroyed, just like the land of Ephraim was totally destroyed. And that's why the people hated Jeremiah for that. They hated him. He's telling them what the will of God is and the word of God, and they're hating him for it. So they want to kill him for it. Verse 8, they want to kill Jeremiah just for telling them the truth.
It's a hard life being a prophet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a hard life just being a normal Joe trying to tell people the truth.
Yeah, that's really
Joe.
True.
Oh,
that's
okay, really true. Joe. Yeah, well, interpreting the word of God makes you a prophet, basically, in the scriptural parlance. I mean, I wouldn't claim the title ever, but in 23 years, there's.
We lost you a bunch there after you said you wouldn't claim the title.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I said I wouldn't claim the title, but when you just tell people the truth, they hate you for it. And now here we see that after 23 years, they're sick of Jeremiah.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do Friday. I mean, I might have to write my program as early as possible and pre-record because my internet is...
It's getting worse, it seems.
Yeah, mine too. I don't know why.
They found out who you are.
I got two modems, right? That I get 50 gigabytes on one and 30 gigabytes on the other. And I got two phones and I get 30 gigabytes on each of them. And I usually make it through the month, but I was home on the 11th and I used my hotspot on the 11th for one day only. And I left town that day and went away for 5 days and hardly used my hotspot at all and didn't use my modem. Are you kidding? 30 gigabytes a day. And on the third day, it said that my hotspot had used up 50 gigabytes. And I think Verizon just fucked me this month. I really do. So now I got my modem and my hotspot are exhausted of their data. And even though it's unlimited, I'm slowed down to 600 kilobits per second. And I'm on my phone right now using that as a hotspot. And it seems that they crank down even my devices that aren't exhausted of data. They crank them down too. Wow. Verizon's just like stealing from me is basically what they do.
They're Jewing you.
Yeah, they're Jewing me. There's no way I used all the data, 80 gigabytes on a hotspot and a modem in 3 days. There's no way I used 80 gigabytes in 3 days. I would have to watch friggin' Netflix around the clock and still wouldn't use that much data. I don't think.
Yeah, they're doing you. Maybe find a different company or something. I don't
know.
There is no other
company out here.
Oh.
It's Verizon. Okay, we got left. And I really have to go, so I'll be right back. I'm sorry. I'll be right back. You'll have to excuse me a minute, but you could read if you wish.
I guess I'll read then. I don't know. I sort of feel bad doing it without Bill here.
Oh, I'm sure he already knows it.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Verse 16. Then said the princes and all the people unto the priests and to the prophets, "This man is not worthy to die. For he has spoken to us in the name of Yahweh our God."
User disconnected from your channel.
Then rose up certain of the elders of the land, and spoke to all the assembly of the people, saying, "Micah, the Morazite, prophesied in the days of Hezekiah, king of Judah, and spake to all the people of Judah, saying, Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, Zion shall be plowed like a field, and Jerusalem shall become heaps, and the mountain of the house as the high places of a forest. Did Hezekiah, king of Judah, and all Judah put him at all to death? Did he not fear Yahweh and besought Yahweh, and Yahweh repented him
of the evil which he has pronounced against them? Thus might we procure great evil against our souls. And there was also a man that prophesied in the name of Yahweh, Uriah the son of Shem, Shemaiah of Kirjath Jearim, who prophesied against this city and against this land, according to all the words of Jeremiah. And when Jehoiakim the king, with all his mighty men and all the princes, heard his words, the king sought to put him to death. But when Uriah heard it, he was afraid and fled and went into Egypt. And Jehoiakim the king sent men into Egypt, namely Elnathan, the son of Achor, and certain men with him into Egypt. And they fetched forth Uriah out of Egypt and brought him unto Jehoiakim the king, who slew him with the sword and cast his dead body into the graves of the common people. Nevertheless, the hand of Ahikim, the son of Shaphan, was with Jeremiah, that they should not give him into the hand of the people to put him to death. End of chapter 26.
There was a Uriah, a priest, in 2 Kings chapter 16 that appears to be a whore for Ahaz and did everything that he wanted. And he's not mentioned again after that chapter. So this Uriah here, well, we're not told who he was. So
did it say what he was doing?
There's no, I'm sorry.
Did it say what he was doing? Like, was he helping the prophet, or?
No, the Uriah that was the Uriah that was with Ahaz did the bidding of Ahaz. Uriah the priest built an altar according to all that King Ahaz had sent from Damascus. So Uriah the priest made it against King Ahaz. Uriah the priest made it Damascus. That's rough. He's saying, upon the great altar burned the morning. Thus did Uriah the priest. All the king Ahaz commanded, and Uriah the priest isn't mentioned again. So that's not, I'm just trying to say, that's not the Uriah that's mentioned here. Mentioned until another one in the book of Nehemiah 100 years later or 80 years later. So this Uriah, we don't have an account of him so far as I know.
It seems he was a legitimate prophet. He was saying all the same things which Yahweh said to Jeremiah.
Right.
Microphone activated.
It's always amazing to me, all the books and prophets.
Jeremiah, the people want to pretty killed Micah, king of Judah. Now Micah was a contemporary of Isaiah, as were Hosea and Amos. Micah was a little later, and Amos was in that time period, but the three of them were contemporaries of Isaiah at one time or another. So Isaiah had the longest ministry of the three of them, even though I think Hosea started a little sooner. Material, Micah the Moreshite in the days of Hezekiah, king of Judah, they didn't kill him. That's their point. They're trying to defend Jeremiah, I think, by using Micah as an example. And it's kind of weird they don't in that content.
Microphone muted. Microphone activated.
Yeah, we've completely lost you now, Bill.
It's windy.
Windy.
User in your channel timed out.
Raptured.
Is that Wendy's?
Yeah, he's at Wendy's.
Raptured the Wendy's.
I wanted to ask him if this was muted. The only time.
Entered your channel.
Yeah, here he is. Is this the only time an Israelite actually
How about now?
Killed a prophet? Because every other time it seems to be Edomites and Canaanites.
Right, but we really don't have the details here, but Jehoiakim definitely. I guess not.
Microphone activated.
We missed most of that too. Pretty much all of it.
Microphone muted.
I wonder if Uriah going into Egypt is sort of foreshadowing that Jeremiah is going to go there later.
It seems like that's constantly the safe haven.
Yeah.
Microphone activated.
Well, I don't think Uriah. Jeremiah went there because he wanted to. I think he went there because he had no choice.
Yeah, for different reasons. But maybe it's foreshadowing, nevertheless, I don't know. Yeah, he had no choice because he even tried to convince the people not to go.
Microphone muted.
And they went anyways and sort of dragged him with them.
I'm typing notes. I don't know if y'all will hear me or not.
Microphone.
You sound better now.
Yeah, the rain calmed down.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
I got a tin roof, but it's not bad because the tin is put on top of the original tile. The owner, just before he sold me the house, just put tin over the roof. I don't know that it really needed it that bad or not, but it was 25 years old.
If you want to, we can hear you pretty good now. If you can remember what you were saying when you first got kicked out.
Fuck no.
It was about this being an example of an Israelite actually killing a prophet.
That's true. We don't really know who killed the prophet. No, because we do know that at this time, Jerusalem was already race mixed. And that's clear in Jeremiah chapter 2, chapter 3, and in Ezekiel chapter 16. So I mean, plausible that many of the people in Jerusalem at this time were probably already bastards, or at least had bastards among them, that just like today's environment seemed to be the guides of society, worked their way into all the influential positions throughout history. I wouldn't think it was any different in Jehoiakim's Jerusalem. Bad. We can, I mean, it's not hard to Israelites that are misled killed one of the prophets.
I mean, but, that is the punishments that they're going to be ruled by the people.
Right. So this Uriah is unknown from other scriptures. That's a point I tried to make earlier, that he's not known from any other scriptures except this portion of Jeremiah. We don't know him from the books of Chronicles or Kings. It seems to be that the people wanted to kill Jeremiah, but certain elders among the people rose up and defended them. They're actually defending Jeremiah here. So they bring up Micah as a reason not to kill Jeremiah. And then they bring up Uriah as a reason that they should kill Jeremiah. But nevertheless, the hand of Ahikam, the son of Jeremiah. So Ahikam, whoever he was, must have been a really influential individual and wouldn't allow them to put him to death. Ahikam, the same Ahikam, is going to be mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 39-43. And it's the same Ahikam.
Yeah, but the thing is, Noble, I was just reading your comment there. Jehoiakim would still be responsible because he's giving the order.
Right.
It's not like the king is going to pull out his sword, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true, yeah.
Yeah, Jehoiakim's responsible, there's no doubt.
Microphone muted.
But we don't know really who killed him. I mean, Saul's responsible for the priest of Yahweh that Doeg the Edomite slew. But we see Doeg the Edomite was happy to do it.
And that no Israelite wanted to do it and would do it.
Not at that time, no.
It's so telling.
But there's so little mention of the deaths of the prophets in scripture. And when you read the books of Kings and Chronicles, it's Jezebel, it's Doeg the Edomite. It's not Israelites doing the killing. And here we only know that Jehoiakim sent men. But the people of Jerusalem did want to kill Jeremiah, who was evidently defended by Ahikam, the son of Shaphan. Who's also mentioned in 2 Kings chapter 22 and chapter 25. In the same period, so it's definitely him. Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, was left as the governor of Judea by Nebuchadnezzar. 2 Kings 25, 22.
Microphone activated.
You mentioned Jezebel, and I know that you've talked about the passage in Revelation when Yahweh says, I gave her time to repent. And I know you have an explanation, but I can't remember, or a plausible explanation as to her, as to that statement. Repeat it.
Yeah, well, it's basically not the literal Jezebel from the time of Ahab that was among in that city.
Right.
Where those churches.
Okay, I see.
But if some woman is likened to Jezebel.
Or she's being used as a type for fornicators?
Yes. Yeah, she's being used as a type. We don't know if the real Jezebel was a Canaanite or not, though. The fact that she was a Canaanite. But Athaliah was not her daughter. That's why I wrote that. I put that together for Clifton 20 years ago, probably more than 20 years ago, probably 22, 24 years ago. I put that together for Clifton back in the early O's, probably 18 friggin' years ago, 20 years ago. I don't know. I told Clifton 20 years ago, and I got that correspondence somewhere in my prison papers, but I couldn't find it. I never saw it again, right? It's not that I tried to find it. The shit's in storage 35 miles from here. It's still in storage that I'm paying for, that I don't have the time to get it out. So I have a storage unit near the old. I have a storage unit 5 minutes from the old house, right? So anyway, I wrote this up for Clifton. I don't remember what year. It might have been 97, 98, 99, 2000. I don't know. I don't remember. Years ago, to try to convince him that Athaliah was not the daughter of Jezebel. And it did convince him. It did convince him. But he never did anything with what I sent him. He never made it into a paper or wrote it out, even though it was pretty polished. Last month in the forum, or maybe the month before, I don't remember. The question came up again, and I reconstructed my arguments. It was a reconstruction of arguments I made like almost 20 years ago.
Microphone muted.
Athaliah is not the daughter of Jezebel. So it don't really matter if Jezebel was it or not. Christ didn't descend from Jezebel. Because Athaliah cannot be the daughter of Jezebel. That in a post on a forum, but it wasn't clear enough for Joe, so I made a clarification. And it probably wasn't, and Joe's right, I probably should have included the information in the clarification in the first place. So I made a clarification.
Microphone activated.
It is what it is, but I don't care. Every fucking encyclopedia, every seminary, every theological dictionary will say that Athaliah is the daughter of Jezebel, but they're all wrong.
Okay, one last thing. So I know that Carthage was settled by Israelites that went from Tyre, and in the time of the drought when Ahab was king. But was the queen, I think it was Dido, was she actually related to Jezebel, or is there any proof of that?
Yeah, I do believe that she is related to Jezebel by Josephus. I think, I could be wrong. Let me see this. Wow, not in there. Pygmalion. Okay, here we go. According to Josephus and Menander's Chronicles of Tyre, Ithobalus, the priest of Astarte, who reigned 30 2 years and lived 68 years. This is Josephus against Appian, book one, chapter one, or paragraph 123. Where Phelez, the descendant of Hiram, was Balas, the priest of Astarte or Ishtar, in 32 years. He was succeeded by his son Bathazorus, who lived in 6 years. Now, Ithobalus was the Ethbal, the father of Jezebel. So, Bathazorus's son was succeeded by Matgenis, his son. He lived 32 years and reigned 9 years. And Pygmalion succeeded him. Pygmalion was his son, though, or grandson. It just says Pygmalion succeeded him. He lived 56 years and reigned 47 years. Now, in the seventh year of his reign, his sister fled away from him and built the city of Carthage in Libya. That's the Dido of the Aeneid. She's not mentioned by name in Josephus. So it seems Pygmalion, because he lived 56 years and reigned 47 years, he came to be king at 9 years old. It seems that he was probably the great-grandson of Ithobalus, the priest of Astarte, who usurped the throne from the descendants of Hiram. It seems that way.
Microphone activated.
So with that, I kind of got confused on the relationship. Would that make her say what relationship she has to Jezebel, or can that be deduced?
Well, that would make her the great-granddaughter of Jezebel's father.
Okay, so her niece, or
yeah,
user disconnected from your channel.
Granddaughter.
Yeah, great, a grandniece. Yes,
grandniece. Because if they were Canaanites, it's just then the Carthaginians would have been ruled over by Canaanites for at least, well, the beginning.
Well, that's very plausible, but do we know that Jezebel's a Canaanite?
Yeah.
I mean, we can't prove it. We don't know. I can't prove it. We'd like to think that she's a Canaanite, but it can't really be proven either way. But Ahab, it seems that the scripture is indicating that Ahab kind of married down. I'm trying to see that scripture I cited where Ahab took the daughter of Ethbal to wife.
Microphone muted.
No. No. Let me just look up Ahab. I'll find it easier that way. Okay, and in the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, began it. Ahab the son of Omri to reign over Israel, and Ahab the son of Omri reigned over Israel and Samaria 22 years. And Ahab the son of Omri did evil in the sight of Yahweh above all that were before him, as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sons of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Then he took the wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and went and served Baal and worshipped him. Now, we can't really take for granted that Canaanites are ruling over Sidon. We can't take that for granted. But it seems to me that because it says it as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, that Ethbaal may very well have been a Canaanite for real. But that's what this is telling us. That's what it's kind of telling us, that Jezebel was a Canaanite. That's the way I read it.
Microphone
what
activated.
About what is it that about him being light or easy for him to abandon Yahweh makes you think that?
In that, well, as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat. He took Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Zidonians. So, as if it was a light thing to you to walk in the sins of some race mixer in the past, that you took a Sheboon to wife. You see what I mean?
Okay, okay.
That's 1 Kings chapter 16, towards the end of the chapter. From verse 9.
Yeah, I actually read it recently, but I was thinking it just meant for him, because it did mention immediately previous to that that he was about as evil as anybody before, or more evil than anybody before. That it seemed evil, easy to him, meaning like it was a light thing, like he never really took the true faith seriously, so it was very easy just to screw that. This is more prosperous for me. I don't know. I don't have any proof of that, though.
Well, they're saying that he took to wife this Jezebel because it was a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat. It leaves a lot of space for interpretation. What's up, Joe?
Well, to me, it says the same thing as what you're saying, Bill. It says that he didn't really fear God, and so it was a light thing for him to sin so grievously.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm thinking.
I see. Okay.
I don't fear God, so I'm just going to go fuck niggers. Yeah. Basically. I'm not saying the Canaanites were niggers, but that they were the equivalent of niggers at the time.
I just hope the King James isn't screwing us on this passage again.
No.
What verse is it exactly?
It reads, it's 1 Kings 16:31, and it reads the same in the NAS and in the Septuagint.
Yeah.
Britain's English says not enough for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, right? And the Greek says, and it was not for him sufficient to walk in the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat. And then the Brenton says, but he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Jethbaal or Ithobal, king of the Sidonians. And the Greek says, and he took, or then he took. In that context, I would translate the kahi as then. So, and it was not sufficient for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Then he took for a wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ithbaal, king of the Sidonians. That's the Greek.
Yeah. So
all three verses are saying that because it was a light for him, thing for him to walk in those sins, that he took that woman to wife. Because it was a light thing for him to sin, he took that woman to wife. All three versions, the Greek of the Septuagint, and Brenton Septuagint, and the NAS and the KJV all say the same thing in this instance, right?
Yep. You know what, though? I know now why I thought otherwise. If you read 30, 31, and 32, which you did. Okay, so after he says they took Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and he went to serve Baal and worship him. But we know that Ethbaal was like the chief priest or whatever. He was a king, and he was like super dedicated to Baal. And it kind of looks like the conclusion of the sentence, the conclusion of the reason that it was life for him comes in the last part, and he went and served Baal.
User disconnected from your channel.
Well, that could be, and she may not be a Canaanite, but it seems to me that it was a light thing, so he married her, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying she's definitely a Canaanite, but he married her because it was a light thing for him to walk in those sins. And Ithabal, I'm not saying he couldn't have been an Israelite. I can't rule it out because I don't have any like definite proof. But he was not the legitimate king of Tyre and Sidon. He wasn't the legitimate king of Sidon. He was the one who killed one of the descendants of Hiram, the Hiram from David and Solomon's time. He killed those descendants that held that throne and took it for himself, but he pulled a coup. And he was evidently very successful at that coup because he ruled for 40 years or more. He ruled for 32 years after he pulled the coup. So he pulled off a coup and he managed to reign for a long time after that, which is rare.
Okay, I'm going to end the recording if that's cool.
Yeah, that's fine. The bottom line, though, is that we can't conclusive on Jezebel, but we can suspect, but we can't be conclusive.